Welcome to episode 2 of Coffee Pods and Wads. Thanks for clicking and listening and for all the positive feedback on last week's episode. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at Coffee Pods and Wads. And we are also on Patreon at patreon.com/coffeepodsandwads. Patreon is essentially a monthly subscription of any amount that you want. So if you want to help me grow and improve the podcast, it's the perfect way for you to do so. If you enjoy the episodes and want to even give me the price of a cup of coffee once a month, now's your chance. If you don't want to, this will always be a free podcast, so there's no panic. For this week's episode, I went to Dublin to meet Andy Ewington of Adroit Fitness. We met outside Square One in Sandyford for a cup of coffee, so if you hear some background noise or our teeth chattering, now you know why. It was absolutely freezing. We chatted about his sporting career pre-CrossFit and his coaching, and he explained how he arrived in Ireland, brought over from New Zealand to play for Monkstown in hockey. And he starts off by telling us a bit about the pressures that came with that move.
With Monkstown, like when you hockey with them, like, would you have seen the fact that they hadn't won in whatever 34, 35 years until like you won it? Would you have, did that kind of ease the pressure because it was like, oh, screw it, like we haven't, it's not as if we've anything to lose here, there's no pressure on us? Or did it add more pressure, the fact that you hadn't and you were close and you could do it or you could lose it? Like,
yeah, I think being like, I came over to play with them, so you know, they paid for my flights and things to come over and play for them, and
yeah,
they helped me out, so I definitely did feel a bit of pressure that I had to perform.
Yeah,
and
I
kind of felt like I needed to bring something,
yeah,
to the club for the investment.
Justify it, like.
Yeah, and you know, they're a great club. They helped me on more levels than just kind of paying for things.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I got stuck or anything like that, there was always people there to help me out and,
yeah,
and things like that. So I grew kind of, they sort of accepted me in, I guess, and I really felt like it was like my club,
part of something,
something like,
yeah,
that I was part of. And the first couple of years when we were so close, after that there was a bit of, it was a bit of a personal kind of ego thing, like that I'd gotten so close to winning something and getting to go play in Europe, that I wanted to come back and do it again.
Yeah.
But it was also just that feeling amongst the club that you wanted to do it for the guys there. And
yeah,
you know, when we did one, I think, did we win the Mills Cup or the Senior Cup first? I think the Leinster Cup was the one they hadn't won in something like 30 odd years. The Senior Cup they hadn't won in 99. And that was the first big trophy, and seeing the members of the club that had been trying to do that had, you know, they'd been playing for 20 years, and
yeah,
they were sort of, you know, in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and they come down and they watch every game, and after every game they come up and congratulate you and they shake your hand and stuff. And then when we won that, and just seeing the sort of emotion in their eyes and things like that about how much it meant to them,
yeah,
just sort of showed you like you're playing for a lot more than yourself, and you actually are playing for a club, and it means a lot to other people that they are still working behind the scenes to,
yeah,
to bring players along and evolve the club to keep winning,
yeah,
and do things that they weren't able to achieve. So yeah, that was a big part of it. You kind of not feel like you owe them, but you want to win for them,
and like a bit of an onus or responsibility kind of, that you're like,
yeah,
giving them something they couldn't have, and like you're the one, or well, part of the group that are going to do it, like, you know, they're going to,
yeah. Yeah, so that was a big thing. And
how do you do that? Like, say you win something, just say you personally, like you win something with a club that hasn't won it in 30 odd years, they haven't won in 99 years, you win it, like where do you go from there? Like, you know, if you're at the top, do you bail? Do you think okay, like, you know, like what's a winner's mentality, like what do you do when you've won?
Well, you just want to keep winning.
Yeah,
there's that feeling that you just can't beat. And to be honest, I know a lot of people talk about, you know, doing your best and performing your best. That's a different type,
yeah,
of feeling, I find. It's something that I've always struggled to find outside of winning.
Yeah.
But winning just is this different feeling that you want to keep chasing. And
yeah, yeah.
Can get kind of, I guess I can easily see how people start cheating.
Yeah.
Because you start to feel that winning is who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel like you have to win.
You don't want it to slip from your grasp. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
And you start to feel that that's your personality and that's who you are and that's who everyone knows you as, is this person who wins. So
yeah,
if you don't win, who are you?
Yeah.
So you can get caught up kind of chasing winning for the wrong reasons in that sense, but it's just enjoyable, to be honest.
Yeah.
And there's always that challenge. Like, someone always wants to come and knock you off, and it's,
yeah,
it's almost personal.
Yeah.
And it does get it. Like, people literally are training to beat you.
Yeah.
And they're trying to beat your team and they're trying to take your club down. And you get kind of defensive about that. You don't want to let it happen. So that's part of a driving factor, I think, in trying to keep winning and wanting to... And you can always feel like you can get better and, you know, do it easier and improve yourself and...
Go unbeaten for longer, maybe, or go... Yeah.
And there's generally higher levels.
Yeah.
Like, we got into Europe, we won the kind of B League to get back up into the top league. So we're one of the few clubs that's actually won that competition, and we got promoted up, and then we got into that division and we wanted to do better and better. Like, I think Three Rock this year was the first time they've won an Irish team has won a knockout stage. So you want to be the first club to do that. You want to be the first club to get into the final four. There's always levels. Levels up.
Yeah, that's good. Then is that kind of growth mindset, like that thing of, say you've won and you want to keep winning, or maybe you've lost and you want to win, or you want to improve, or you want to get better. Is that something that, as a coach, you've found that is kind of innate in the person that you're dealing with, or is it something that you can help develop and help grow? Like, does it have to naturally occur, or can you kind of inspire it, like, as a coach?
It's a bit of both. There's definitely that drive, like, but I think it comes down to sort of what you want and why. You know, everyone says it's, oh, you know, you've got to find your why and things like that, and when things line up it makes it a bit easier. But there is that drive where people really want to improve themselves and they want to be the best, and then there's the people who like the idea of it.
Yeah.
And you pretty quickly find that. It's kind of hard to, I think it's hard to cultivate in a sense. So it's very hard to pick someone up and be like, you're going to push yourself to the limit just to be better than a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, oh.
They have to want it. Like.
Yeah, they're like, why would I want to do that? Yeah. I'm pretty happy just, you know, trying my best and having a bit of fun along the way. And then there's the other people who thrive off that sort of competition, and they use that to better themselves. And
have you ever had to quell it in anyone?
Not so much quell it. I guess I've had to question it in a lot of people. It's like, you know, do you really, is this actually what you want? Or are you just telling me this because you feel like you should want this? Or do you actually want it? And then it's the thing that you have to quell, I think, is the urge to do more.
Yeah.
Like, they always, they're flipping from thing to thing. Oh, I've got to get better at this. And then they see someone else, they're like, oh, I've got to go do this now.
Yeah.
Oh, this person's better than me at this. And especially in the sport of CrossFit, you've got to try and stop them watching Instagram. Stop them watching all the PRs people are posting, and try and keep working with them, being like, look, you're improving. You know, this person may be better at that, but that's only such a small part of it. Like, you can't.
Or it's just one video.
Yeah, it's just one video. Like, that's all they're training for.
Yeah.
You've beaten them on every single workout you've ever gone up against them. So, like, don't worry about that too much. But no, it's not something you really want to quell, but it's something you want to, I guess, keep questioning.
Yeah.
Make sure they're doing it for the right reasons. And I think, like I said, the wrong reasons is thinking that that's themselves, that that's their persona, that if they don't win or if they're not competing, that they, you know, they're a nobody.
Yeah.
It's trying to remove that thought and being like, you want to chase this because you want that achievement, you want to do that, that's cool, but...
Like, separating the athlete from the person.
From the result, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's all good, it's all well and good to, like, chase those high-end things, but just as long as you're not doing it because you think people are going to like you more because you win.
Or like you less because you don't.
Yeah, exactly. So it's offering a lot of sort of support and just managing... Managing that side of things.
Say you had like a master's athlete at the games last year. I was at the games as a spectator with my wife, and I figuratively shit myself every time I went around any corner. I was like, oh my god, look at this, oh my god, look at this. Like, is there a responsibility on you as a coach to kind of remain stoic and be like, it's just another day at the office? Like, you know, like, did you feel an extra pressure to stay calm for her, so that, you know, you were kind of grounding her, or did she need that? Or
Yes and no. I think you got to enjoy the experience as much as possible.
Yeah.
You just got to not get, you know, carry don't away. Get completely caught up in it.
Yeah.
Stay focused, make sure you've got to train for these events, and I think if you've just made the games and you've never done anything else, you're going to get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But we had done so many competitions beforehand. We'd been around the big names. Like, we were training at a gym, and Sarah, Sigmund's daughter, strolled in and started training, like, right next to us. And then afterwards, like, went up and got a photo with her, had a bit of a chat with her, you know, did the kind of fan thing, but why not? Like, it's she's right there.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to sit there and go, no, you can't do that, because you're going to lose focus. It's like, you only have to be focused for 20 minutes when you're doing the workout.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, you know, relax and have a bit of fun.
And then say, like, the odd time in our gym, we'd have maybe, and just like I said, there's a New Year's Eve workout coming up now, like, you know, a bit of fun or whatever. Like, I'd have, like, between 10 and 15 nervous peas before that. Like, has that been an issue, or is it a case of, like, as a coach, you prepare them so that it becomes a thing of, this is just like every other day, you know what you have to do, you know what your limits are, you know what your pacing is, you know this workout and you know how to attack it, just go and do it?
Yes and no. Like, with Lex going,
it's hard to ignore, you're in an arena, like.
Yeah. It is. Like, you can't replicate that.
Yeah.
You have to focus on certain things about, like, pacing, and, you know, this person might go out of the, like, you know, shot out of a cannon and they're going to take off, and you just have to ignore that and stick to your pacing.
Like, yeah.
But at the same time, you've got to watch that person, and if they're not slowing down, you know, if they're, you have to go.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to push yourself a little bit of discomfort, and you might have to go out a little bit quicker than you want to, and then hold on. And so you can't just say, you know, go out and run your own race, because
it's not an individual race.
No.
But yeah, you're on your own. Like.
And you've got such a, you know, you've probably got maybe 10-15% extra at times.
Adrenaline
and everything like that that you can't get in the gym.
Yeah.
So you're going to feel different. You have to teach them a lot about their pacing, and so that they don't get caught up with that nervous energy and they take off too fast. But at the same time, you can use competitions as training and go up to this workout, just go as fast as possible and see what happens.
Yeah. If
who
you
knows?
Shit to bed, then you know next time.
Exactly, can't do that
next time. Like, remember that workout, don't do that. Like,
but I'd be a devil for overpacing.
Awesome.
Like, I can literally, like, if I'm doing rowing repeats or anything like that, I can row within like 0.1 of a split every single row, absolutely perfectly. But then you ask me to pick the pace up a little bit, and I panic.
Yeah, I either go 1,000 or like 1.
Yeah.
Like, if I recently realized that I either physically or mentally, I'm not sure which, cannot pace an assault bike. So, like, it's either like make as loud as possible, or like, say if I'm at, the other day we were doing one of the finishers in one of the classes, like 4 miles on the bike and then basically you know, an AMRAP of gymnastics or whatever. But like, I hit, you know, went off on the bike, and about 10 seconds in I was like, I will die if I you know, I just can't. Like, it must be like, have you worked with people in the past where you're kind of like, oh, please just listen to what I'm telling you to do on pacing, like, just stop?
Yeah, it's exposure to the machines as well, and the scenarios. So you'll get some people that are like, they always go out too hot, and a trick I learned through the OPEX training is if they really buy into you, and not everyone will listen, but you say, you know, you've got to do 8 sets. If you get slower on any of the sets, you stop. That's the end of your training for the day.
Oh.
You don't get to train anymore.
Yeah.
They learn to pace pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they'll start slower and pace themselves. Or you just teach them lessons. They're like, yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, they blow up, and then they go back, and I'm like, yeah, you did. You went out too fast. You know, yeah. And you let them blow up, and you let them blow up, and you go, look. Can you see the pattern here?
Whenever you're ready to start listening.
And you just got to talk to them and explain to them. You'll get some people that are, they're more wired to go out and go fast, and the difference between them going fast and them pacing is huge. So it can be hard for them, because you're going, right, you have to go really, really slow here.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of athletes like that, and yeah, you've just got to train them into it and sort of show them the benefits, and they've just got to have that bit of buy-in, I guess, and learn that, you know, the pacing is a big part of it. And how do they learn that? Well, they've got to go slower than what they think, and every time, and have little wins. It's, you know, it's like, get these eight right. Doesn't matter, you don't have to go at the perfect pace today. And that's what I think too many people try to find. They try to find the maximum level that they can maintain. But CrossFitters are really good at suffering. So they can suffer for a long time. And
present company excluded. Yeah. I'll take myself out of
that. Yeah, I don't suffer well at all. As soon as I start to suffer, I back off. Yeah. That's why I'm not great at the old CrossFit competitions. But you'll get some people that can just suffer. And they're not actually getting any good adaptation from their training. And that's a big issue. So you've got to maybe educate them on this is how you get this adaptation, and this is how you're going to progress, and this is going to allow you to do this at a later stage.
Yeah.
And I think once people get that and start to understand that, they start to do it. They start to buy in. They'll start to do the training.
Yeah.
Because they'll understand the benefits.
Yeah. Say after the games, I saw on one of your Instagram posts, you were saying that Alexis turned around to you and said, like at the podium, said, like, I want to be there. That must be like a sigh of relief there, that there's no pieces to pick up, there's no like back to the drawing board, there's no, like, I mean, emotionally for you as her coach, there's not, you know, you don't have to start from scratch again and say, like, right, look, I know that happened and it wasn't great, but at least blah blah blah. Like, the hunger, do you know, it must be so pleasurable as a coach to hear an athlete say that after downing tools, I want more, instead of being like, what do we do now? Do you know that the fire is there? Like,
yeah, it's probably the hardest thing I always find with people is you ask them what they want to do and they're like, oh, whatever you think. I'm like, this is not my journey, man. Like, I'm just here to guide you along it, and in my view, do what's best to achieve it. So I guess in a lot of my athletes and clients would know the most frustrating thing for me is when they don't give me a goal.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they want to do, because in everything I program, depending on their mood, is wrong.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, this is boring. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do that. And I'm like, well, it's because, you know, their priorities aren't there. And so if they don't like something and it doesn't lead to an end goal, they won't do it. But as soon as they have that priority, like with Lex, it's like she wants to, like at the moment she's taking a year out because of her shoulder.
Yeah.
She's always had a bit of an injury and it got a bit worse throughout the season. We kind of strapped it together for the games and it didn't come right, and going back into the open and then the age group qualifiers got moved forward, it was just a bit too much to dive straight back in. And you know, whenever the frustration and things come in, she's like, well, I want to go back to the games, so I just have to do this.
Yeah.
Whereas if she wasn't sure if she wanted to go back to the games or not, like, you know,
might make the same sacrifice of resting or, you know, minding herself, I guess.
Yeah, and the training can really drop off, and it gets a lot more difficult. But knowing that, like, she really wants to go back and do that, then she'll do what's necessary. And, you know, we talk and decide what we think is necessary. And then she's like, right, well, I just have to do this.
Yeah. You mentioned there, like, the coaching and, like, originally you were coaching, you know, I don't know, whatever the opposite of online is, like person to person, like, you know, you're with a group or whatever, and then you moved to remote coaching, I suppose, and online coaching. Like, was that a difficult transition to make, or was it like made easier by the fact that you were weeding out, like you were finding the people that really want it because they were going out of their way to get what they wanted, rather than just like, oh, well, he's coaching in the gym, I'll just go in and go as normal. And
Yeah, it's just different. Like my style and my thought process and even my personality to an extent doesn't really fit the group model.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to have the group model being sold and produced in the gym alongside, say, like myself, who's saying, well, no, training by doing an individual program and getting coached is the best.
Yeah.
So you've got two very conflicting things in there, so it was either open my own gym or essentially go online.
Yeah.
You get the same you get problems with online, like people think that's what they want.
Yeah.
So they come on board and you make all the plan, you start working, and then they realize that they don't really want, like, they don't like training by themselves. They want the group. They want they want the fun. They want that that interaction with other people. And
is it hard, like? Like, I'm a teacher, I teach in primary school. I maybe this says more about me as a teacher or like my ability to educate, but like I can't imagine teaching someone long division by email. Like, is it difficult?
It's very difficult to teach certain things. Like, I found, like, obviously gymnastics is really hard, weightlifting to an extent is really hard, but everything else is not too difficult. It's the skills are hard to teach. But it depends on the person. If you get a visual learner, you just send them videos and they can watch it and they can make corrections.
What do you do if you get, like, say a kinesthetic learner, then someone that needs to be nearly manipulated into positions? Like,
you need to you tell them they need to find someone.
Yeah.
Like, they either need to find a gymnastics coach in the area or a weightlifting coach. And sometimes I've even said to people, this might mean that you find another coach altogether.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get the best results working with me, no matter how good my program is, if you can't make the adjustments and improve your positions and improve your skills.
Do you ever take it to heart if someone, like, say, is working with you and, you know, for a considerable amount of time, and then goes, oh, I found such and such a person, or maybe just says, like, oh, I'm out, and then you might see them training with someone else or using a different program? Or would you ever take that personally, or are you just kind of like, yeah, look, I've another person waiting in the wings here, so it's fine? Like,
No, I mean, you can't take it personally, otherwise you're going to be out of the business pretty soon, you know. Yeah. Like, you got to have a bit of a thick skin. The only thing I would take personally is if someone started going around saying that I was shit and I was useless or whatever, and things like that, when, you know, a lot of the time you can look back at the training and be like, well, you didn't do half of it because you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I've messaged a few people myself and just been like, look, you're not doing half the sessions. You're messaging saying you jumped in on this session, you jumped in with that. I was like, why are you paying me money?
Yeah.
Like, don't pay. I don't want to take your money. Because it's like, I just don't feel it's right, you know.
It's
like,
so,
yeah. Yeah, a little bit. And they're not getting the best out of my training, and then they're also not a good reflection on me.
Yeah.
Because they're sitting there, they're in a bad mood, they're not training well, they're not really progressing, and then people are looking at it going, well, I thought he was good, like, why?
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So I've had that talk with a few people. A few people have left for various reasons, and it just is what it is. Like,
yeah.
I think, you know, I put it up in just like a recent post. It's like, I have my methods, I have my ways. You either like them or you don't.
Yeah.
If you like them, you pay me for them and you'll follow along. And if you don't, you'll find someone else. And that's what I think. I think, like, programming wise, it's almost at times less about that. It's more about adherence and your relationship with the coach.
Yeah.
And if you can't form that relationship and you don't get that adherence, then you're not really going to get good results anyway, and it's not enjoyable. Like, I hate writing programs when I'm not getting any feedback on them.
Yeah.
It makes it really, really difficult, and I lose motivation. And then I'm just like, look, I can't be bothered writing this anymore. So
yeah.
I don't get any enjoyment out of it, and, you know, that's what I do this for. I do this to enjoy it, and I enjoy it, the feedback and the interaction with the people. So if I'm not getting that, then, you know, the relationship's got to be 50-50.
Yeah.
Whatever energy I'm putting in, I need to get that energy back out. And the same with a client. You know, if you're putting loads of energy in, your coach is giving you nothing back, then, you know, maybe it is time to find a new coach. And or vice versa. It's, you know, coaches shouldn't have any fear of firing clients.
Yeah.
At the same time, so.
Yeah. You mentioned programming there, like, so CrossFit obviously is about, you know, it's highly skilled, well, depending on who you are, it's highly skilled, there's a lot of strength required, there's a lot of endurance required, there's a lot of fitness required. Like, could the average layperson or someone who's, like, you know, not aiming for the games or aiming to win a sanction or whatever, but just aiming to do well at a local competition or whatever, like, can you prioritise one? Do you have to do them all in tandem? Is it kind of cyclical? Like, just say for me, for example, do you pick one and say, like, right, I'm shit at gymnastics, so I'm going to just do skills, like EMOMs or whatever, loads? Or is it like, well, if I get really strong or get lighter, gymnastics will be easier? Do you focus on that, or do you have to do everything all the time? You know, like, Mondays strength, Tuesdays gymnastics, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's
Because I know that would be a frustration I've had in the past, where you're jumping from thing to thing, where you're like you said at the very beginning, where you're like, oh, I'm shit at this, I need to get better at this. And then, like, I remember for, I'd say about a year, I was just a Metcon fiend, because I was like, I just pull ups and Metcon, I'm shit at pull-ups. So if I do loads of Metcon classes, I'll be able to do loads of pull-ups, which obviously didn't work. And then, like, Joe, the coach in our gym, just a few weeks ago, was like, you just need to stop and just do a full season of strength and just see where you are at the end of it. And now I'm doing, you know, sets of 10 or whatever. But, like, I know it's something that I've suffered with, and I imagine it's something that a lot of people listening will have suffered with, of where you're like, right, I'm shit at pull-ups, I need to work really hard on pull-ups, but then your squat goes down, or, you know, something suffers. Like, it's very hard to find a balance. Like,
yeah, it is. And you know, I think what the big thing is like, when I went back to, you know, ignoring Instagram and ignoring even other people in your gym, it's that you just see a lot of people just progressing faster than you, and often you don't even find the same person. You find, oh, well, they're getting better, X is getting better at pull-ups than me, and Y is getting a bigger squat than me, and Z's getting, and I'm like,
yeah.
Well, that could just be what they're good at. Like, everyone is good at something.
Yeah.
But you can't pick six different people who might be focusing on six different things and then think that they're just getting better than you, and then you've got to try and chase all of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, maintenance is easier than acquiring a skill. So if you're really, really strong aerobically, you can probably drop your volume down to 40% and maintain.
Yeah.
And then you can put that energy into something else. And you got to pick the low-hanging fruit. It's like, well, why are you bad at pull-ups? Are you not strong enough? Well, then yes, then a general strength cycle will benefit your pull-ups. You've already got the engine to go with it, maybe. So getting stronger will go towards that. Or is it a skill thing? You know, is it that you need to practice more and more skills out of fatigue? Because
yeah.
You can't learn under fatigue.
Yeah.
You don't learn good movement patterns and good control under fatigue, so you've got to do it out of a fatigue session.
I wish I heard that a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of people get, if they're really good at something, they get, again, they get that attachment to that's who they are. Like, if you're the guy with the biggest squat in the gym,
you don't want to lose it.
You don't want to lose it, because yeah. Now you're not that guy anymore.
Yeah.
And that can be really tough for people, because for some people, you know, they don't have a lot of wins. They don't have that, you know, people looking up to them, or people, you know, impressed with what they do, maybe. So that little thing that they've got in the gym, like, that's something that they want to hang on to. And I used to think that was kind of silly, but then when I look back at myself, and it's like, you know, I did the same thing with, like, wanting to win
in
with hockey. Like,
yeah.
I wanted to win, and, you know, I was the flicker, and when I started to get challenged by a couple of younger guys coming through, I wanted to get better and better at flicking and things like that, so that I could still be the top.
Yeah.
So that people still turned to me to be the best at that.
Yeah.
And you kind of did that to the detriment of my general fitness, and I probably would have been a much better hockey player if I had just run a bit more.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that. So yeah, I mean, I guess experiences like that I can learn and do that. But no, I think that's where the group thing does get a little bit more difficult, because the training is just general. So you're going to get a little bit better at everything, and maybe not great at anything.
Yeah.
And if you want to focus on something in particular, it gets a bit tougher. But in terms of programming for someone who wants to focus on it, they shouldn't really get any worse at any other skill or development. And if they are going to get worse, you kind of set a level. So say if you can squat 200, you know, for the level that you want to compete at, you might only need a 185 kilo squat. So as long as you stay above 185, we're not going to really squat much.
Yeah.
As long as you can hit 185, we're happy.
Yeah.
So, but if you start to drop below that, then okay, now we need to squat a little bit more, because we can't afford to lose anymore. And you balance your training out like that. So you set kind of guidelines as a coach, being like, right, well, they are really strong in this, but they can't get any worse than the next. And you just shift the priority, so, you know, the majority of your training goes towards what you want to improve the most.
And is aerobic capacity the quickest, like, if you have it, is it the quickest to build back up? Is that why it's like, would that be the easiest to sacrifice, to be like, right, I just won't do cardio for a while, I'll work on such and such a thing, and then within about 2 maybe 3 weeks you might get your cardio back to where it was?
Yeah, there's two different I find these kind of these, obviously, we'll just use the easy terms that everyone sort of knows, the aerobic and anaerobic. So the anaerobic you can develop very fast, and you lose it very fast.
Yeah.
So basically, you peak for a competition, and then, you know, you take a week off, and
it's gone.
Now everything feels terrible.
Yeah.
But it hasn't, like, but your base level, like, you get those people who, you know, they've done, say, running for years and years and years and years and years, and then they don't really do any running anymore, but then they still just go out and crush
yeah.
a big long run. Like, that base development doesn't really go anywhere, but you lose that kind of the top end
yeah.
sort of piece a bit quicker. And again, it just comes down to maintenance. Like, even with the thing with squat strength, people go on, I keep using the squat because everyone kind of chases those sort of things, but people go on a cycle to peak their squat, and they peak their nervous system, they peak their body, and it's actually a skill to learn to lift heavy. So they just learn to lift this one weight, but they haven't built a base to support that and keep it.
Yeah.
So then as soon as they stop that squat cycle, they drop back to their base. Whereas with aerobic conditioning, you tend to just keep building a bigger, it's all about base building and engine building. So people do the longer stuff and they build this massive base, and it's very hard to lose that. And then you peak on top of that.
Yeah.
And that's what people I find don't really do with strength, is they don't spend the years and years just accumulating strength so that they almost never go back to below it.
Yeah.
You'll probably know the guys around who have done a lot of strength training, and it's like, oh, you know, he hasn't benched in a year and he's still knocked out 90% of his 1RM.
Yeah.
Just because he's...
Just like muscle memory and like a mental thing, like you say, training the big lifts, like training, like
yeah, it's just that body's adaptation to it, and yeah. that's what the body has developed. That this is ground zero. Like this is what I have to be to survive.
Yeah.
But when you peak it, it doesn't build that. So there's a bigger gap. So then it just falls back.
Yeah.
So, and the hard thing is a lot of people don't really take an off season. In CrossFit, like every other sport, there's clear off seasons and seasons. CrossFitters don't really take that. They just train the same all year round and then go try and jump into a competition, and then as soon as the competition finishes, they go back into competition training.
Yeah.
Whereas other sports, when your season finishes, you go into base training.
Yeah, back to hypertrophy or whatever, like.
Yeah, and you go through those cycles again. So
yeah.
And that's what I find is, yeah, people just don't, they're a bit impatient. They don't realise that it takes years to acquire that base level of strength that doesn't reduce as fast, but it's very, you can very, very quickly like peak someone. So that's why when people just, you know, a lot of people do it when they jump on a new program because they're starting a squat cycle. Well, of course you're going to get better at squatting, putting on a squat cycle, but that's probably going to disappear as soon as you then jump ship to go do the gymnastics program.
Yeah.
You do that for 6 weeks and you go back and try and squat and you can't squat.
Yeah.
You lost all your gains.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't. You just lost your, you know, your nervous system's ability to create the drive to lift that. Whereas, like I know myself, I've spent so long on a rower because, just that's just what I actually enjoy it. Like I'll sit for an hour on the rower, no problem. I literally haven't lost anything on the rower. I can still go in and almost hit all of my old numbers, and I barely row anymore. But I did the ski erg for like 6 months and got really, really good on the ski erg. I was putting in 80,000-90,000 meters a month on the ski erg. Took about 2 months off, came back, and I wasn't even close because I hadn't built that that volume. Like I had built it, you know, 6 months isn't long enough to keep it.
Yeah.
Whereas I've done 8 years on the rower. So
geez, I must really love the rower.
I don't like running, so
you program competitions as well. So you did, like, say, the Blanchardstown Throwdown, and, like, I suppose one question I've always wanted to know, because so many competitions are similar and so many are different, like, what for you is a good test for a person at a competition? Like, what's a good test of all-around fitness? And then does that alter drastically if you're programming for a team competition? Or is the only difference that you're adding in a communication element, like that, you know, they need to be synchronized or they need to be in tandem with each other?
I think it depends on what you're trying to target. Individually, like, I like tests of fitness where fitness is the issue. So like, it's a bit of a bugbear I see with a lot of competitions, just trying to add things in to try and be innovative and different rather than just being good tests of fitness. You know, like, there's very few competitions trying to excel at just being the best test. A lot of them are trying to find a way to be different.
Niche, like.
Yeah. But every year they've got to come up with something different.
Yeah.
So every year things get crazier. Like, I think, to be honest, in like recent times, I think with the Filthy 150, the unbroken rope climb is a great little step forward on a movement. It's a great little test. Whereas, you know, if they had made it, I don't know, double rope climb swings or something mad like that,
just to be different,
I'm like, well, that doesn't really, like, it's going away from the test of fitness. And I guess people fall back on the, oh, it's CrossFit, be prepared for anything.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but that's not an excuse for just programming random shit. Like,
yeah.
You've still got to have some sense behind what you're doing. So for individuals, you know, I get that it's got to be fun as well, and they like the new challenges. But the bulk of the programming, I like some element of fitness to be the limiter. Not so much skill or just crazy volume. It's like I love Helen as a test. The run 400, 21 kettlebell swing, 12 pull-ups. Because once you can do 21 swings and 12 pull-ups unbroken, it's now how fast you can run.
And not lose the unbroken.
And not lose the unbroken on those. So now it's like a pure test.
Yeah.
And I love the mental slogs, where it's like you can... I like using weights, like those moderate weights, where you never actually have to stop moving it, except for the fact that you don't want to lift it anymore.
Yeah, like there's a lot... Say, in the Open, this year gone by, and it was two, but you know what I mean? Thing I really noticed was that there was a lot of that, like the wall ball wasn't heavy, but fuck me, it's easy to put down a wall ball.
Yeah.
You know, like, and like toes to bar, it's really easy to let go of the bar and just stand there looking up at it for 3 seconds, and that 3 seconds could be, you know, 20,000 places in the open, in the leaderboard. Yeah. Like, you know,
yeah, that like the snatch burpee one, you know, like that was just a gut bust. Like, you either wanted to keep doing burpees or you either wanted to keep picking that snatch bar up. Now, some people obviously weren't fit enough and, you know, they died because of that reason. But at the same time, the ones that were fit, you know, possibly the difference in a 30 to 40 second difference was just how hard, how much you wanted to suffer and
how quickly you were trans on the bar, like.
Yeah, and things like that. And so I like a lot of tests like that. For individuals, for teams, I guess it depends whether you want to test the communication. I look at it as, look at last year's sanctionals. Everyone was saying that Mayhem was going to get slaughtered at the games, because they were not doing well at sanctionals. All these individual people coming together to make the super teams were crushing all these workouts, because everyone was just writing individual workouts and saying, well, now just do this as a team of four.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like some events were just like, send out one athlete to do this workout and that's your score.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they went to the games, and what is it? Communication, it's teamwork, it's synchro, it's this. And no one even got close to me.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't even a competition.
Yeah.
It was a joke at how they just walked that competition.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference in the programming. Like, I think you can either choose to just make it the four best individuals will win, or the best team communicating will win. And I think that's just a choice the programmer makes.
Have you ever had limitations where you might be like programmed for a competition and you feel limited by, say, like maybe there might be a workout that you think of that would be like, geez, that'd be really cool, but then maybe you're limited by the flow of the day, like the flow that the day needs to have, or the space or the equipment, or the fact that, oh, and if I do that workout as workout number two and then workout number three we'd need to clear the whole floor and start again, like, do you ever find yourself limited by that?
Generally I find there's two limitations in competitions. It's the flooring and the space, and the equipment, so all of that kind of tied into one. And then it's actually volunteers and judges. Like, it's, and this is not a, you know, a slight on the volunteers or judges, like, I mean, they're the only reason the competitions get to operate.
Yeah.
But it's very hard, because you write this competition out, you got this great plan, then you're like, I need 60 judges.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can get 20.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to basically scrap everything, and I have to, so yeah, you have to base it on, you know, how many judges do you have, how many people can you have on the floor at once. Oh, I have to run 6 heats here, so I can't do 30 minute workouts because that's going to take 3 hours to get through.
Yeah.
So yeah, all of those things completely limit, so you've got to work out your flooring space, your judges, everything like that. And you want to work it around, you know, what's going to make a good competition based on that, yeah. Not what workouts can I think of that are going to be cool to do.
Yeah.
You've got to balance that.
You have to take the spectators into account then as well, of like,
yeah,
you don't want them, I mean, like,
no one wants to watch,
I don't think I'll ever forget the marathon.
Yeah, I was going to say, no one wants to watch people on them on a row for an hour.
Yeah.
But it is a good part of a fitness competition.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to have, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, of one rep maxes. But what gets the crowd hyped the most,
yeah.
You know, seeing, Paulson go for a 140 kilo snatch, you know, like, people want to see that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're kind of going, oh, it's a big use of time in a competition, especially if you're only doing one day.
Yeah.
And it's a big portion to give someone, you know, full points for such a small portion of fitness,
yeah.
In my opinion. You know, when you've only got four workouts and one score is going to be based on one lift, you know, like, you're giving them a lot of reward for being good at one, potentially good at one thing.
What did you think then about the games last year, say, like, the fact that there was no big lift, you know, with the cuts? Like, a lot of people are complaining that they kind of cut too soon and that all of the first few workouts pre final 10 were like running or, you know, like that really.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they just got that. I think they got it completely wrong, like, with the cuts. Cutting after every single event and then cutting after kind of specialist events. You know, you do the rock run, so you get all the endurance people through, and then you do a sprint.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've just gotten rid of all the sprinters.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do too well. And I guess, you can say, oh, well, that's CrossFit, you've got to be good at everything. And I'm like, yeah, but you also, you're rewarding people for coming out of the gates hot and giving them no chance to come back.
Yeah.
Like, if you look traditionally, so many people are in the top 10 after day one and then barely even finish the games.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the fitness.
They just blow up, like.
Yeah, they don't have the fitness to do a 3-day, 4-day competition. You didn't get to see that element. Like, a big part of CrossFit competitions is, can you recover? And they took that element out completely for the majority of people. And they rewarded the people who probably didn't have that element and just went balls to the wall.
Yeah.
With no, like, reckless abandon. Like, they didn't care about the rest of the competition. They just had to make the cuts.
Yeah.
So I've heard they're changing it this year. Do the every second counts? Because I looked at someone like Fikowski.
Yeah.
And he didn't get any great placings in the early workouts, and that's why he got cut so early. I think he was always sitting around like 20th, 23rd or something. But he was barely behind 10th place.
Yeah.
Like, he was so close to having elite scores.
Yeah.
But and everyone around him who might have just knocked him out of getting cut, they got like a second place finish.
Yeah.
And it pushed them right up the leaderboard. But then they actually did worse on him on every single other workout.
Yeah.
And the workouts, like, some of the people around him were like 5 minutes slower than him on a couple of workouts.
But it just didn't make enough of a difference.
But it didn't make any difference because no one came in between. So the every second counts thing could help that. But yeah, it's just, I don't really see the format fully working.
The cuts in general, you mean?
Yeah.
I think one of my favourite things that I saw at the games was, like, I think, I don't know, was it Make What's Great Again or someone put up a thing of, like, don't anybody ever complain about the cost of a drop-in. I just saw someone pay $10,000 to do one workout.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they did get a lot of kit.
Yeah.
I spent 2 hours holding shopping bags full of kit, well, because they try everything on.
Yeah.
So, and they go through all their gear and it's like a big fit out. They just get handed all this stuff, so
yeah.
You know, they got a fair amount of gear for it. But they also knew that they had the choice not to go.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have to. Like, they knew the cuts were probably a little more aggressive than what people thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like, the majority of those people who got cut in the first section knew that they were going to get cut early. They probably thought they were going
to
get a bit more.
I'm sure if you ask anyone, would you rather go to the games and get cut or not go to the games, they'd pick go to the games, like, you know.
They still got a great experience.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were, for the most part, they were allowed to train out in the back room. Like, you know, they got to meet all the people. They got to go through all those things. They got to, you know, carry their flag around. There's, like, lots of little things they got to do that mean a lot to people. And you know, for like that's the, you know, currently the biggest stage you can get to. So to be able to step out on there is like is a personal achievement, and that's certainly worth something, and that's worth more than like 10 grand to some people. Like I certainly know, like I've had a small thing, like I flew home to play in a like a Barbarians hockey team, and being able to stand out on the pitch and have the anthem played, and we were playing like Fiji and stuff, so they actually did like huckas and stuff before the matches, and like to face that, you know, that trip cost me a lot to go back and play that, and I didn't really get anything out of it.
Just memories, like.
But yeah, memories, yeah. I got, and that personal sort of feeling, you know, that I, you know, I wouldn't have got any higher or anything like that. So, yeah, it was tough. I think the thing that annoys me with CrossFit is how they don't announce things.
Yeah.
You know, like if they had just made this clear from the start of the season, like, absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But that's probably the thing that did annoy me, is they were just kind of like, well, we're not going to tell you anything. We're not going to tell you when you're going to get cut. You just got to...
I remember, a few, like, we were there, and a few, like, I didn't know anything. And a few of my friends at home were like, oh, apparently there's cuts coming up after the... You know, like, and not the people in the arena, people at home, like, there's a lot of conjecture. And then, like, maybe an hour before, it was like, oh, actually, yeah, there will be cuts after this workout. You know, it was very up in the air, like...
And it was pretty brutal on the athletes as well. Like, they finished the workout and then got, like... They either got held behind or dragged into an area... They're basically like, if we don't read your name out, or if we do, I don't know, one of the two, but basically if we don't read your name out, you're a cut.
Jeez.
So they just read the list of names and then like, see us.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yeah, and that's it, and that's how they were cutting people, and you're like, that is rough, like,
yeah,
that's a hard thing to do. And then they were basically straight into the next workout.
I found
it pretty tough, but yeah, I just don't know how it's going to work in finding the fittest.
Yeah,
you know, like, you look back and you still had basically only the top four were the only ones that were actually in competition for the top four.
Yeah, yeah.
The other six weren't there, and one of the guys, Morad, injured his hamstring, didn't do another workout, and still finished 10th.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that's prize money and everything that he got over the athletes and the other one. So
yeah, the guy who was 11 must have been ripping when he saw him not do the clean, like.
Yeah, you know, like, and
like, it's not his fault.
No, it's
like,
not. And that's the thing, and it made it difficult to watch. Like, I couldn't even follow it. I mean, I was more focused on Alexis.
That was actually one thing we were disappointed at, is that there was no
coverage of the Masters.
Like, there was no coverage of the Masters, but even for being there, there was like everything clashed. So like, it was like, okay, well, do I want to watch the, like, you know, top names that I've followed compete, or do I want to go in and watch the age groups and Masters? You know, like, you're kind of, you, there was, I don't know, it's just very like, I think probably their hands are tied, I suppose, because they had so many people there, like, that they had to run in tandem with each other, like. But I just feel
they kind of do, but it's pretty disrespectful, like. Though, like, the Masters groups are, they're putting an equal amount of work than anyone else is, you know. They're doing all the training, they're doing everything, and, you know, it's
even the teens were doing a workout in the outdoor, and on the big screen behind was the swim and paddleboard, and it was like, come on, like, give them their minute, like.
I know, and it, you know, it's there are some big names in those age group divisions as well, and there's great athletes. Like, I mean, like, Lex made it to regionals the year before.
Yeah.
As an individual, and you know, that's exceptionally hard to do. And there's a few other Masters there that are on the cusp of qualifying for the elite divisions.
Yeah.
Joey Kimden, who won the 40-44, was at Felty.
Yeah.
So they're not bad athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
They're still worth watching, but yeah, they were just kind of, you know, it's just pushed aside. And you know, a lot of people have that stupid thing of like, oh, who wants to watch the Masters anyway, like, why not watch the elites?
Yeah.
It's like, well, maybe their family and friends who don't give a shit about the elites,
yeah.
they want to watch them, like.
Yeah.
Like, I would much rather watch a friend compete than someone that I have no interest in. And you know, it's like with a lot of these sanctioned events, I think there was there two last week or three last week, I don't even know. So that's the thing, I literally don't care about them, because I don't have any interest in watching the people that are there, like, unless it's going to be a great competition, like in Dubai. You obviously had, you know, an elite field there, and you end up wanting to to watch that. You know, and
I think a lot of people were skeptical about the sanctions, but like, I know I was talking to Joe last week, and the two of us were kind of in agreement that it's cool in a way, because like, if they all run at this, like, Filthy was, I thought it was a really high standard, like, and really high quality. If they all run at that level, you've essentially got 9-10 little mini games in the lead up to the games. Whereas with regionals, the issue that a lot of people had was that it was like a stacked field in Europe, because you had Iceland, and then America had whatever, way more regionals. You know, like, I think the good thing about sanctionals is that it's like, you know, like, I met Tim Poulsen because Filthy was on, and he was at it, you know? And, like, that made my year, like, you know? And, like, I know there'd be other people in other countries thinking the same.
It's definitely good. Like,
it makes it more accessible, I guess. The athlete's more accessible, and the chance of making something yourself more accessible. Like, going to the games or making regionals was out of reach for a lot of people, but qualifying for a sanctional, if it's a smaller sanctional, is a bit more realistic, like.
Yeah, I guess I like the sanctions. I like the sanctionals. Like, I like the concept of it. I'm not sure I'm that impressed with, like, having 30 of them.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's just too many. Like, you can't really follow them. There's two or three on every weekend. I mean, I think I don't like the idea of all of them also using the same qualifiers.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was 13 that used the Open.
Yeah.
And all that means is that you just if you get one injury,
yeah,
and you can't do the Open, you've just missed out on 13 events. Yeah. And people are like, oh, well, there's still 15 other ones. It's like, well, maybe, but, you know, that's only if they, you know, if they suit your timetable or whatever. But it is hard losing out on that many, and then you see people competing on back to back to back to back events, which isn't healthy for them. So, and, you know, they're going to stay in those events, and they're going to take that place, and then they might decide they might qualify the weekend before. Or get in and they pull out, and now there's just empty lanes that other people could have taken. So the qualification process, I'm still, like, I think, say, like, what the international online qualifier, how there was kind of, you know, three or four events, that kind of makes sense. The Open, I guess, personally, I wouldn't want to use it because I have no control over the programming, and it's going to get a specific type of person, like, to the events. So I don't know if I would be.
I suppose for them it's a way of guaranteeing big names, I guess. Do you know, like, if your top 50 athletes in the world are invited to a sanctional.
But see, most of them, like, once they qualify, they're only going to go somewhere for money.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to go to the smaller events. So then, you could come 500th in the Open in the world and still qualify for a sanctional because no one else happens to want to go to that one. But you have, I would find it very, I don't know how early they give out places, but I think it'd just be hard to plan your year and what you're going to do, because you've got to apply for all these sanctioned events, and then you've got to hope that you were in the top 50 people that applied for that one. So, but you also, at the same time, you can't have 30 qualifiers going on at the same time. So, the pros and cons, I think you need probably 2 or 3 years to see how it plays out and things like that. But, I think, you know, you're going to get Filthy, Waterpalooza, Granite Games, Rogue, obviously Dubai. I'm probably missing one or two, which, you know, I'll apologise for, but, oh, you know, like, French Throwdown is one.
Strength and Depth.
Like,
the big names,
they're getting there. There's definitely going to be ones, I think, that, like, they're all the known ones, and then I don't really know all of the other ones, and I haven't seen their events, so I can't comment on them. But, you know, like, I've been to the French every year for 4 or 5 years. It's a pretty high quality event. Things like having, it's going to put pressure on other people to keep the events high. I'm hoping that it's not purely just a money thing on who gets a sanctioned event. Like, hopefully there is a bit of a performance rating.
Yeah, well, you'd have to imagine that if, you know, Tim and those guys that were at Filthy go back and say, like Dan Bailey says, geez, yeah, Filthy was go crack, like, I really enjoyed it or whatever, and it's really well ran. I mean, that surely has to stand for something at HQ, like, that they're not going to be, like, solely reliant on money, like, you know?
And that's the thing, so, you know, that's, And that's the worry I have for the sanction events, is CrossFit changing its mind.
Yeah.
You know, like they cut regionals on a whim.
Yeah.
Who's to say next year they're just like, oh, actually we don't like the sanction events, we're just going to take the open winners.
Pick names out of a hat.
Yeah. Like, you know, like that's the other thing that would worry me, is like...
Yeah. If they pull the rug, like...
Yeah, they need to allow it to develop. And and I think you see the next thing that's probably going to happen is what's already happening is competitions underneath are qualifying for the sanctions. So there's a second layer.
Yeah.
So you go and compete at the region, the like local event. But if you win, you get an invite to the sanctioned event. And then you win the sanction. Like, so yeah. There's essentially a league and there's a progression. And, you know, that could be a good direction for it to go as well.
Yeah. With Filthy then, like, you were like head judge at Filthy this year. What was like, was there like an ingredient or like something magic that was there that brought Filthy from a really good, really well run, like, you know, local kind of competition? Well, national, I suppose, like everyone did it, but like, do you know, it was box of four teams like for the last couple of years. Was there something special there that brought it from that to being like an elite, high standard, like well received, well ran, like everyone was full of praise for it that was at it and that competed at it? Like, was there something special there that brought it up to that level?
Yeah, so not meaning this in a bad way, but pride. Like, I think I know, you know, Jamie, Dorina and Chris, I'll just use their three names. I know there's a lot more people involved than that, but they, I'm sure, have felt they were representing Irish CrossFit. So like I said, going back to me playing for the club, and I wanted to always be at my best and I wanted to perform my best to make the people of the club proud. I think they wanted to make Irish CrossFit proud. They wanted to make Ireland proud of them. They wanted to make Ireland proud of the event. And then they wanted to showcase it to the world. So they weren't just doing this to try and make a quick buck.
Yeah.
They weren't, you know, for no other reason. I think they wanted to really put Irish CrossFit on the map. And I think when you've got that as part of your motivation, I could be completely wrong, but I can see that by the way they post and the way they speak, that, you know, that's what one thing that they were definitely aiming for.
Yeah.
So your standards do go right up for that, and I've tried to do it every year.
It has, like, and it's, I did it 2 years ago and last year, and then
it could be a bit of a bit of luck as well. Like, the way that they've progressed has perfectly led them to a time where they could make a jump to the sanction.
Yeah.
If this came along 2 years ago, they might not have been in a position to do it.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know,
it has increased. Like, even the out in the airstrip last year, and then Puncher Centre, there's a natural progression in size, in numbers that are at it. And then I guess another thing I wanted to ask you as well is, like, you were involved in kind of the, I suppose, like the professionalism, or like the, like, improving the professionalism around judging and around like standards and stuff in Irish CrossFit. Like, do you feel like that played into it as well, that if that level wasn't there, like if you and Jamie hadn't kind of pushed that with Elaine, like, and kind of moved it along, do you think that, you know, Filthy would have suffered as a result? Like,
I think it, like, they really took and ran with it. Like, we had a, like, I was involved in the early conversations just about, this was more,
I was told you wouldn't take credit for this.
Yeah, well, I think I was definitely there to spark the conversation that, you know, this the judges' standards, we can't just have random people turning up on the day. Like, there's got to, it needs to be better.
Yeah.
Like, at the same time, I know they're volunteers, but if it ever wants to go towards that, the volunteers are getting paid.
Yeah.
Well, then they need to be at a level that I'm actually going to want to pay them for.
Yeah.
At the same time, and to improve Irish CrossFit as a whole and to improve events, we wanted a good team of, you know, willing judges that wanted to do it, that knew the standards, that were up to the level and everything like that. And you know, they took it and ran with it with their judges training. Elaine's always like organizing judges for competitions and
that's
things
the thing
like
that. I've really noticed, I do a good few competitions, I enjoy that aspect of it, like, but it is a relief when you walk on the floor and you're like, oh, I know that judge, like, because, like, you know that they have a certain standard, that they're not going to be like, you know, no repping you for nothing, or handing reps for nothing, or, you know, that there is a base level there. Like, when you see the same familiar faces turning up in all the different competitions, you're relieved, actually.
Yeah, and it feels like a fair competition.
Yeah.
Like, I got queried a couple of times by athletes coming up to me and be like, oh, you know, like, my judge was really, like, was hammering me for this. But I'm not sure, like, I don't feel that other judges were doing the same. And you're going, well, as head judge, one thing you were doing was running around just making sure...
Yeah.
That these little pieces are intact. And I was like, well, you know, I watched it and I saw other athletes weren't doing what you were doing,
yeah.
Or I was seeing it being corrected on other people. And I go, okay, cool, just as long as everyone's getting judged, yeah, like that, like, we're happy.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing, it does just bring that level playing field in. While, you know, as an athlete, you shouldn't really be worrying about what's happening, you know. With things like that, you always are, because you're trying to win. Like, it's people's livelihoods are on the line and things like that, so you've got to make, and people are putting a lot of effort in. So as a competition organizer, you want to be out. That's it's almost probably one of the most important ingredients.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you need the athletes to turn up, you need a good venue, you have to have some good workouts, but if you don't have good volunteers and good judges,
the wheels will come off pretty quick.
Yeah, it does, you know. And
I think it's great as well, dude, so publicly, like, the, you know, like, having Elaine involved publicly and having the training being public and stuff like that, like, it kind of humanizes the judges as well, and hopefully, like, removes or lessens the chances of that, you know, like, I think there was one or two issues at Filthy, like, where it was, you were kind of looking at that, he's going, oh my god, calm down, like, that's a human you're talking to, like, but, like, you know, hopefully the fact that the more they become humanized and the more they become, like, public faces of it, the less likely that will be, and the more
I think at the same time, like, you know, I was happy the odd time to take on, like, some of the disputes. And I think one of the things that's probably going back to my experience is, like you say, with those athletes who are, you know, getting, they're supercharged. Like, they've got so much emotion and adrenaline. Yeah. Like, they're not thinking and they're frustrated, like, something's gone wrong, and they just kind of lash out a little bit. And
it's easy when you're sitting in the stands, yeah, to be like, this is a waste of your time.
Yeah, a lot of it wasn't personal. Like, yeah, there was never any personal attacks on the judges.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of, like, but no.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then you go over and you know, the thing that happens that I found was that, you know, we had it very well drilled with the judges, is just don't get involved in it. Just go, okay, look, I'm going to take you over to these guys. They're going to deal with that. We're going to leave it there. And if the athlete keeps going, just be like, okay, cool. Like, we're going to, because what would happen is the judges, if they start going back at the athlete,
yeah.
Now it becomes a fight. And that's what escalates things. So the judges were really good like that. Like, as soon as there was an issue, they would wave out, they'd bring them over and be like, can you, the athletes also learn pretty quickly that there's no point, like, these guys aren't making any decisions, so go talk to the people that can. And and there are little things that, you know, you also, the good thing about having a good team of judges is that it takes away that thing of, like, you know, the bias.
Yeah,
like, if you go to a local competition and it's all local judges
and a local athlete turns up,
yeah, you know, like, it's just what runs people's through people's heads. And whether it happens or not, I'm, you know, it's neither here nor there, but it's being able to just remove that,
yeah,
is nice. And I think it'll be, like I said, the hardest thing at the moment is having, like, the judges and the volunteers. And you can sometimes get a bad rap for maybe mistreating judges, but no one does it on purpose. And a lot of the time we get 30 people signing up,
yeah,
and 20 people turn up on the day, and then 6 people leave halfway through.
Yeah.
So what do you do with the last 14?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to overwork them.
Yeah,
to...
Sorry, lads, but...
Yeah.
You know, and so that gets hard. So that's where we want to add that bit of professionalism into the judging. That's part of, like, where it came from, is that we want people who are going to turn up, they're going to put their effort in, and then they're going to get rewarded for doing it.
Yeah.
And then the judges have also got a bit of clout, as in, you know, if a competition is, like, is treating judges bad and not doing anything for them, you know, the whole judges, like, little union, I guess, can turn around and be like, no, we're not going to judge at your event, go find someone else. And then when the community finds out that they've got no judges, you know, that puts their event into trouble. So
Okay, so I have a quick fire round then,
mm-hmm,
that I've going to say I always do. I've only done one episode, so. And then a couple of questions there from online afterwards. So there are a couple of either or ones, and then there's, you know, name your favorite, whatever. So deadlift or squat?
For max load of reps.
Max load, I'd say.
Deadlift.
Right, clean or snatch?
Oh, power clean.
Oh.
If it's not, like, otherwise it would be a, if I have to squat, it would be a snatch, but power clean for sure.
Sprint or chipper?
Chipper.
Fraser or Froning?
I think Fraser.
Americano or flat white?
Americano.
Hockey or rugby?
Oh. rugby.
Okay. Podcast or playlist?
Podcast.
Sanctionals or regionals?
I like regionals.
Nostalgic. Favorite podcast?
Oh.
Apart from this one, obviously.
This one's only one episode in, so. I guess the one I've listened to the most is Mind Muscle Project.
Cool. Dream client to coach. So you could pick anyone, any athlete, and you got to coach them.
Any athlete? Oh. Lex. Get the coach all the time.
Right. Some questions from online then. So, Irish CrossFit, between now and, say, 2025, is there a dominant force that you see coming up? Are they already here? We'll say, if we take the male and the female, is there someone that you see coming up that say, like, they're going to be seriously good? Or do you think that that person or those people are already here?
I'll be honest, I if you're talking about coming up and someone in the, you know, you're talking maybe 18, 19, I don't really know anyone. I don't have anyone on my list or on my sort of radar, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I think is it Tige would be the one that you're sitting there going, like, he's serious. Like, he went a little quiet after making the games, but now you're looking at him going, like, he's
basically turned into a man in that period of time. Like,
yeah, and he's still got a couple more years before he truly
peaks,
gets there. So he's definitely, like, he'd be the one on the. On the radar. I guess I'm being slightly biased. I've started doing a bit of work with Michaela Gill.
Yeah.
She's one with some serious potential. I mean, you know, did a 150 back squat for a double. That kind of puts a lot of things into perspective. But and then even looking at like an old client of mine who's working up with the guys in system training, Hannah Moore.
Yeah.
She's been like, she's coming, like, she's making huge strides again. I think she's found her flow for training again.
Yeah.
She was one who used to work with me and just at the time didn't enjoy it, so moved on, and now she's basically moving, I guess, with my greatest competitor, I guess, in the scene. But like, she's flying, so you can't.
It is actually remarkable watching her Instagram and just seeing the, like, the leaps.
Every
couple of months is a huge leap made. Like,
it's been there, and she just needed to find her flow and find what kept her training, and she's found that at the moment. So
yeah.
You know, it's great to watch and it's great to see.
Yeah. Another one that came up then was, do you think you worked a lot with Jamie Heaton?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's still capable of challenging individually, or have we already enjoyed his peak? And do you think maybe that, like, following on from Filthy, like, teams maybe are his best route to the games?
Yeah, in a way, yes. I don't know if he's peaked as an individual. I think he's still got
more to give.
He's still got more to give in that. I've always thought that a lot of, like, qualifying methods don't really suit him.
Yeah.
Like, when you see him go to a competition, he really finishes outside of, say, like, the top 10. He's always got really good finishes, but the system rewards winners. Like, if you need to win an event, because you get the massive big points difference. Like, the difference between first and fifth is like, what, 25 points, but the difference between fifth and tenth is 10 points.
Yeah.
So you don't get any reward for being in there. You only get reward for the win. So, so I've seen a lot where you watch him and he just doesn't often have a bad finish, but doesn't always have that big win. And I think that's what makes him a serious, like, team competitor, is that on every event he's going to be one of the best on the floor.
Yeah.
At pretty much every single event.
His sandbag throws are filthy. The distance.
He loves it. He went on one of his little missions was the old monster bag program, and he just had a couple of heavy sandbags and did a lot of work on that. Like, that's something that, you know, he actually has done a lot of to improve his overall strength, and yeah. He's worked with that, so it came off in that event. But I think if he sticks with the team route, he's going to be a serious athlete on a team.
Yeah.
And you know, he's picked up a lot of extra work and stuff. Like, his business is growing a lot as well, so that takes a little bit of focus away as that's growing, and he's having to put a bit more time into that. But I think if he wanted to, there's definitely still more to give on that individual side. Yeah. I just not sure if that's where his head's at. I think he enjoyed the team, and yeah.
So I hope you enjoyed that chat. I want to thank Andy for his honesty and sharing his time and his knowledge. I really love listening to him, and I hope you did too. Next week's episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm planning on doing a solo episode to help you get to know me a little bit better and understand why I started this and where I hope to bring it, which isn't daunting at all. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again next week.